Good morning. It is time to get up with Introspective Aaron. He's not having it anymore, and he will tell you why. The question is, how does it affect his team? Meanwhile, the decision has been made in Chicago, or has it? We'll try to explain exactly what they're doing with the quarterbacks now. And when they're right, they're right. I'm all in on the Cowboys, and I will give you the single biggest reason why as we get up with you starting right now. With or without the hats, we are delighted that we are here. Bartholomew still has his eyebrows, but maybe not for long. Damian Woody is ready to go. What are you looking at me like that for?
Well, don't worry. We're going to chop it up about that whole cowboy bit because I got something to say to you about
that. We've got an issue today. We're smashing helmets and who knows what else, and that's not all. Look at the crew we put together on this Thursday for you. Lewis Riddick is getting ready to see the Cowboys on Monday Night Football. Jeff Darlington and the one and only Shefty all here and ready to go as we get up with you starting right now with the beginning of a fascinating week three in the NFL. It actually kicks off tonight with the Panthers and the Texans. Maybe not the sexiest game, but Carolina seeking its first 3-0 start since 2015. They've lost four straight that have been played on Thursdays. So we have that to begin, but then Sunday it gets really good. We've got Kansas City hosting the Chargers. Patrick Mahomes, 16-2 against the division with a 78.8 total QBR, best of any in the league since 2006. Tom Brady playing his first game ever at SoFi Stadium against the Rams. This could be a playoff preview. Brady, by the way, has already won at 41 different stadiums, three more than anyone else ever. And then closing out Sunday, Aaron Rodgers looking to even up his record against the 49ers. It has been quite a week for Aaron Rodgers, who has had a lot to say Monday and Tuesday and yesterday. Let's hear it all.
I just think people like to say a lot of and it's nice to come back in here after a game like that.
It's absolute horseshit to give a platform to people who have no idea what they're talking about as far as my mental state and, you know, my focus.
I do want to maybe rephrase or refocus what I said. I strongly believe in everybody's ability to have an opinion, and I respect the fact that they have an opinion and should have an opinion. My issue is a platform given to individuals who only desire to say inflammatory things that are not based in fact. Personally, I think I would be a little sensitive to people questioning my commitment to this team. Said it from the start, if I wasn't 100% committed to the squad and my team, then I wouldn't have come back.
Okay, so clearly a lot to unpack there, and I want to start the unpacking with Lewis because you had them on Monday Night Football, and obviously he looked great against the Lions, but I know you had a chance to talk with him leading into the game. What can you tell us, and how can that inform what this whole conversation has been?
Yeah, he had every right, I believe, to go ahead and call out people, whoever he was that he was specifically talking about, that were trying to speak on his mental state, his commitment to the team, and whether or not this was a guy who was all in and trying to get this team over the hump and get them to the Super Bowl. Because when we talked to him, look, there were different points in time in our conversations with him where you could tell he was very much so, I don't want to say emotional, but he was someone who very much so was cherishing the fact that he was back with his football team. He had like a guy like Randall Cobb who had come back, who he had played a big role in bringing back to this football team that he was so happy to be around. Someone who he emotionally had a lot invested in, someone who he trusted, that he loved as a teammate and as a friend. And he really did want to go ahead and put his stamp on this season with a rebound performance against Detroit. And he absolutely lit him up. So, I'm all in on Aaron Rodgers and his commitment. There's no question about that.
Jeff Darlington, fill in some of the blanks.
Well, I just think that a lot of times we wind up taking a narrative from the offseason, and the second we see it somewhat validated early in the year, we're like, see, told you so. This is what we should have expected. But there's a lot of examples of similar situations. 2018, Tom Brady skipped OTAs. There was friction with him and the organization at that time. He came into that season. He lost two of his first three to the Jaguars and to the Lions. Guess what ultimately happened that season? Tom Brady won the Super Bowl. So I think a lot of times, had we known all of the things that were going on behind the scenes in 2018, we probably would have spent those first 3 weeks saying the exact same things. And good thing we didn't, because we would have been wrong. So I get where Rodgers is coming from here. And it is often important to be careful that we don't create opinions based on narratives that aren't built in fact. So I kind of get what he's saying here.
Now, I like, and I like the new haircut, by the way, too, Jeff. So let's come here and let's just talk about what might be the most important piece of all of this. They're playing a tough game Sunday night in a place that has not typically been a good place for Aaron Rodgers, back at home where he grew up against San Francisco. Let's talk about the team. As you watch this team play through two games, you have questions or are you feeling good?
No, I have questions, particularly on the defensive side of the football. You know, Joe Barry, who's the defensive coordinator, I mean, I've been seeing over the past couple weeks teams just going up and down the field on this defense. And you know, listen, we can have the conversations all we want about Aaron Rodgers and how Aaron and his mental state and all those type of things. But if the Green Bay Packers want to get back to the NFC Championship game and ultimately to a Super Bowl, that side of the ball has to play a lot better, because they brought in a new defensive coordinator. They got rid of Mike Pettine, thinking that, oh, this is an upgrade. And through the first 2 weeks, they, like Blake Bart said, they can't stop a nosebleed right now.
Now, look, this is not – they didn't win that game Monday night as easily as the final score would make it look. Rodgers played great, but that game is like two plays away from being right there hanging in the balance at the very end. How good is Green Bay?
I think the rest of the NFC has caught up with them, right, and maybe even passed them. When you think about the fact that probably the NFC West is going to get four teams in, if I had those two, I don't care if it's in Green Bay or not, I think that, you know, they lose to one of those teams, whether it's the Cardinals, whether it's the Seattle Seahawks. I can see them, you know, being able to beat the Green Bay Packers. And to your point, like, he opened up Pandora's box. Nobody asked him to take us on Days of Our Lives in the offseason. We were trying to enjoy our summer.
We had to chase him around
and see how he was living. And now, like, I think he inserts foot into mouth this week, because the criticism is going to come back. Because guess what?
Yeah, I like that.
The media are trolls. That's what we do, right? And it's not just the media, like the traditional media. Now you have the bloggers. And so it's going to be there. The narrative's out there. He needs to close out. He's going to get criticized this week when they lose to San Francisco, because San Francisco is way too physical for them. The brand of football they play is not a good matchup. Styles makes fights, and San Francisco will always be a bad matchup for Green Bay.
Could that be your eyebrow pick this week? At some point this season.
Man, you're trying to get my phone off, man.
Lewis, final word to you.
I'm about to taco meat. I got plenty of that.
Bart makes Lewis laugh, which makes me happy. Lewis, final word.
Yeah, man. You know what? Look, I agree with – look, I don't agree that we should be trolls in the media, but, you know, sometimes that's the only thing that really keeps people relevant as far as that's concerned. But I'll say this about Green Bay, all right? I'm also concerned about the defense. I'm also concerned about the fact that this is a team that doesn't have any pass rush. I'm concerned this is a team that New Orleans ran the football on, you know, at will. Aaron will have to carry the day until they get better on that side of the ball. I just don't know if that's a recipe to get them to where they ultimately want to go, which is a Super Bowl.
One of the things they have going for them is that the division in which they play is not very good, which brings us to Chicago, where the questions continue to fly even as decisions get made about the quarterback. Justin Fields will get his first start Sunday against Cleveland because Andy Dalton is dealing with a left knee injury. The Bears coach is Matt Nagy. He was asked what will happen when Dalton's knee gets better, and here's what he said.
When Andy is healthy, he's our starter, and then I go back to for Justin. Justin's worrying about right now, and Justin's worried about trying to help us beat Cleveland. I've talked about it this entire time that we're not going to get into that what-if game. I don't really want to go there other than just saying that when Andy is healthy, he's our starter.
So he has not wavered from that. Adam Schefter, what can you tell us?
Listen, they went into the season with the plan that Andy Dalton would be the starter for as long as he could be this year. And in a perfect world, as Matt Nagy did in Kansas City when Patrick Mahomes was drafted there in the first round and sat on the bench for the first 15 of the 16 games, learning from Alex Smith. That was the plan here, that Justin Fields would sit on the bench, hopefully, preferably, for the whole season. Now, that's probably not realistic and probably not practical, because at some point in time, the team would lose, Andy Dalton would struggle, whatever it may be, but that was the plan, and they're sticking to that right now, saying that Andy Dalton will be the guy once he's healthy, but he's dealing with a bone bruise on his knee. He's considered week to week right now, Greeny, and so in the interim, Justin Fields gets the start. And I would say this, if Justin Fields plays well and they win, I would imagine it's going to take Andy Dalton's knee another week to heal beyond what it is.
And you know what that sound you hear is Shefty's dogs speaking for all the Chicago fans.
This is life.
That's what all the Chicago fans, they're all barking at the TV right now as you're saying that. They're all yelling, what? What? That's ridiculous. Louis Riddick, you've been on top of the situation from the very beginning. Fill us in here. He's sticking to his guns on the Dalton of it all. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he's taking it game by game now, okay? If Justin comes out here against Cleveland and goes on the road and wins this football game and lights it up, throws for 250, 275, 300, something crazy like that, Allen Robinson goes crazy. I mean, then, of course, he's going to sit back and he's going to go in that meeting room and go into the staff room. He's going to be looking around at his coaches going, Andy's our starter when he's – yeah, and as Adam said, yeah, we should probably hold him out another week. This is all going to be very, very, very fluid at this point because now he has the perfect perfect way to go ahead and put him in if Justin shows that he is the spark that this team needs and can take this offense to a whole nother level. Now, if Justin goes out there and his eyes are real big and he struggles and the team struggles and it looks like the offense is bogging down even more and he thinks this is going to be a detriment to his development, then he will find himself back on the bench. I think this is very much so contingent upon how Justin plays.
So this could be, Bart, the first ever injury that will basically heal dependent on the performance of another player, right? Andy Dalton's knee will be as healthy as Justin Fields plays well.
Yeah, Andy better put some Robitussin on that. He better hurry up and get back and say that he's healthy. When you think about Justin Fields, this is the perfect best-case scenario because it gives them a soft landing because if Justin struggles, they can say, okay, they can go back to Andy because, okay, he was always our starter. But if Justin plays well, then they can continue to say, okay, well, we're going to let the young kid play and see how far he can take it. I mean, when you look at his stats, 6-for-13, you know, through an interception, right? You look at that play, you know, he kicked out of that run, that very easily could have been a fumble, right? So it's like, you know, maybe the kid's not ready. It's something that maybe that they're saying that he's not ready to process the entire offense. They're going to have to simplify it, really, really run the ball, boots and waggles and throwbacks and use his athleticism because you don't want him trying to figure out. We know what rookie quarterbacks that struggle. We saw that last week, Greeny.
D. Wood has sat here as you were talking this entire time with his eyes closed. What can you tell us here, D. Wood?
Greeny, I don't know what the hell Matt Nagy is doing. Like seriously, I don't know what the hell McNagy is doing. Sitting here talking about Justin Fields isn't ready. He's not ready. That's been the whole thing, all offseason, you know, after the draft, all that stuff. You have Nick Foles on. If Justin Fields is not ready, why isn't Nick Foles playing?
Well,
why isn't Nick Foles playing? Why are you paying Nick Foles all this money sitting on your roster? You sitting here, you've been telling us that Justin Fields isn't ready. Then all of a sudden, with the injury to Andy Dalton, you're going to slide him in. What the hell are you talking about?
D-Wood, he's a trade chip. You know what that's all about. They're trying to wait for somebody to get super desperate that needs a backup quarterback. They got him in bubble wrap. They're not trying to get Nick Foles hurt. They want to get Nick Foles traded up out of there maybe for a fourth-round draft pick for somebody that's desperate for a backup quarterback. Did you see the quarterback injury report last week? Looked like an episode of MASH or ER.
Let me get Shefty back in on that thought for a final word on that because that is one interesting point. If Fields isn't ready, Foles is there, and he obviously knows the offense. What do you think?
Well, Foles is the backup right now. They'd rather give Justin Fields the shot. This is what everybody wants to see. They've been waiting for this. But I would just point out this. We were talking about the injury. 20 years ago today, Greeny, Mo Lewis knocked out Drew Bledsoe, and the Patriots were going to stick with this young Tom Brady until Drew Bledsoe was healthy. How'd that work out?
Yeah, way to pick scabs.
Worked out pretty well for them. 20 years ago today, Sergeant Pepper told the band to play, and Tom Brady became the greatest player of all time. All right, we're just getting rolling here. Coming up, how about them Cowboys? I'm on the bandwagon, and I need to convince at least one large friend of mine to jump on with me. We will see if he doesn't smash my helmet before the day is over. Plus, Big Ben's big pain. Just how badly is he injured, and can the Steelers get their offense fixed before it's too late? We're answering all those questions as we get up with you on ESPN.
Delicious, meet nutritious in the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We're back on Get Up. And meanwhile, on planet Earth, this was the locker room celebration for Coastal Carolina. Bart and D Wood, what are we seeing here?
Look like a fat Rey Mysterio, man.
D Wood, are you
design? I'm looking at this as like, this is some cheap layaway type of Bills Mafia table breaking thing. I don't know what the hell I'm looking at right here.
Is this in Florida?
What is this?
Coastal Carolina.
One way or another, that is an interesting way of celebrating a win. In the meantime, let's run the hurry up through a bunch of NFL news with Adam Schefter. Schefty, big loss for the Bucks. What's the latest on AB?
Yeah, Antonio Brown has tested positive for COVID-19. Now, he still can be cleared in time to play Sunday's game with 2 negative tests 24 hours apart, but nobody thinks that that's realistic at this point in time, and so the overwhelming chances are he's not going to play Sunday against the Los Angeles Rams, which means the Buccaneers will have to lean even more on Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Rob Gronkowski, and the rest of the talented receiving crew that Tom Brady has. AB should be back for New England the next week. And Carson Wentz didn't practice yesterday, still nursing ankle sprains to both ankles. And if he can't go, that would mean that Jacob Eason would be in line to start Sunday's big AFC South battle against the Tennessee Titans. Again, more likely than not that Wentz doesn't play, but they'll continue to see how he's faring during the course of this week. Could be a Jacob Eason week. And as for the Miami Dolphins and their quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, yesterday Brian Flores said additional tests revealed that Tua has fractured ribs, which means he is out of Sunday's game against the Las Vegas Raiders. Jacoby Brissett will step in and start in place of Tua. We'll see how long the fractured rib sideline Tua, but you could tell with the way that he walked to the sideline last week, hunched over and being carted off, that there was a real chance that this could be the case, that he'd miss some time, and he's going to miss this Sunday's game at the very least.
Well, that's just a little bit of an example of what Bart was just talking about with all the quarterback injury news of last week. And then that leads us to Pittsburgh, where we have that as well with Ben Roethlisberger, one of the many hits that Big Ben took on Sunday against the Raiders, injured his left pec. It's enough to say he doesn't know which one it was. What he does know is he will do all he can to play Sunday against the Bengals. Here he is explaining the injury situation now.
I don't know how it happened. I just know it happened early in the game, and I'm going to do everything I can.
And how does it bother you? Only when you laugh? Or what?
I can do that okay. Typically, when I reach for something outside the framework of my body, or you know, try and push up off the, like get up off of something, the ground or something like that.
That's great specificity. Why are you reacting that way, Bart Scott?
Because that's like what old people do, man. They wake up like, oh, man, I pulled something. I don't know what I did, how I did it. Listen, I'm concerned for Ben, man, because, listen, I played with the late, great Steve McNair.
Yeah.
Right? And Steve McNair, when he got there, he had an injury report that was the size of a binder, a dictionary. Right? And eventually your body just can't keep up with it. And Ben's going to have to ask himself, you know, how much is too much? Because if he pushes through this, when I hear pec injury, I think about the bicep eventually maybe tearing or rolling up, which you had it happen with Brett Favre. But when you have pec injuries, like some things you shouldn't push through, This is something that can possibly end this season if that bicep pulls or tears.
Shefty, fill us in on whatever blanks we have here. What can you tell us about Roethlisberger?
I think there's some question about his availability for Sunday's game, and he's going to want to go out there, and he's played through a lot of injuries that Bart's talking about. This has been his MO over the years. But again, think about the quarterbacks in his draft class. Eli's doing Monday Night Football. Phillip Rivers is coaching high school football. And Ben Roethlisberger's trying to get ready for a football game with a pec injury that he suffered on Sunday. Now, again, he is usually somebody you can count on and depend on to be out there. And I think that's the way he's probably thinking right now. But they still need to get through the week to see how he's feeling on Sunday to know that he's going to be good enough to go.
Playing behind that Steelers offensive line is a health hazard. You know, like you need some type of insurance playing behind that offensive line. But listen, I think the Steelers as an organization, just taking a bigger picture, you know, Bill Walsh, legendary coach of the 49ers, yeah, he had a saying that, you know, it's better to get rid of a player a year early than a year late. Yeah. And I think that's where the Steelers are sitting right now. You know, we all know Ben's greatness, but I think the Steelers have really put themselves in a tough situation because they held on to Ben too long. I mean, he can't move.
Yeah.
He can't get rid of the ball any quicker than he's doing right now, and he's still getting beat up. He's not going to last 17 games the way he's been getting hit in the pocket in the first two games.
Well, the problem is his backup is Tooth to Truth Haskins going on right now, so he's not going to be able to do anything because this is supposed to be a year that was supposed to be a gap year for him. So they didn't do a good enough job. They tried with Dobbs. They tried with Rudolph or Randolph, whatever his
Rudolph,
name is.
Rudolph, yeah, Mason Rudolph.
Yeah, close enough. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, they're stuck with the cap casualty, and that's sometimes what happens, right? Sometimes, you know, organizations like the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Baltimore Ravens, they allow guys to go out on their shield. They allow Polamalu, who they kept a year too late, and they're going to let Ben Roethlisberger, certain ones that get chosen. When I was in Baltimore, they maybe held on to Ray Lewis a year too late because it's like, thank you for your services. And Ben is another example of that, but they definitely have to start thinking about the quarterback position.
But here's the thing. This is a team that in many other ways feels ready to win right now. That's an excellent defense.
It is.
They've got the receivers. They drafted the running back, and it feels like they're a line and a quarterback away, but that's a long distance in National Football League terms. All right, let me leave that there for the moment. We're coming back with more on this, and I will say it again. When they are right, they are right. I'm all in on Dallas, and I will give you the single biggest reason why the Cowboys are for real. After all this time and all this talk, they finally got it right. I will explain the one biggest reason why. Plus, we could start to see some answers to the biggest question surrounding Baker Mayfield and the Browns. You'll hear what that question is and what the answer is as we get up with you on ESPN.
I'm
all in on the Cowboys. I'm all in.
You got the accent? How about them Cowboys?
How about them Cowboys? I mean, they're for real. Dak is a legit MVP candidate. I can't even see. Dak is a legit MVP candidate.
I was on the fence, but you got me sold.
Let's go.
How about them Cowboys?
How about it?
Put that cowboy hat. If I have one, I grab one right now.
How about them Cowboys? I'm in. I'm all in. So that was yesterday here on this program, and that's just the kind of highbrow, kind of insightful, content that we try to bring you every single morning here on Get Up. And D-Wood is going to yell at me a little bit later, but he's overdoing KJM on the radio. Lewis, what is with the shaking the head?
What are we doing, Greeny? Greeny, what are you doing, man? Look, so you just bailed on the WFC, huh? You just bailed like that? And you put that hat? What is that accent? What were you doing? I think I heard that. I think I heard you doing that yesterday. I couldn't believe it. I was just like, I don't know if I heard it in my car. I don't know what it was. But I was like, what the hell is Greeny doing? Green, you can't do that. Not after 2 weeks.
I will say in my defense. Yeah, 2 weeks. So here's what I will say in my defense, Lewis. And in fact, let me come over here if I can, Chrissy, and let's bring everybody in on this because I will make my case. All right. I have been the ultimate in Cowboy doubters, right? I have said repeatedly on this program, they're always the best team in July and August. And the problem for them is that September comes and everything tends to fall apart. Well, this time, September came and everything has been lined up against them. They should have gotten run off the field in that opening game against Tampa with everything that was stacked up against them. And then they go to play the Chargers and they have a million different adverse circumstances coming their way. They lose to Marcus Lawrence. They're plugging in a linebacker in his second game ever to play defensive end. You know what they do? They look great. They look like the team that has finally gotten things right as opposed to the one that always gets the big things wrong. That is the point that I'm trying to make. I don't know if they're going to be better than Washington or not, but here's what they're not. They're not the joke. Through two weeks at least, they don't look to me like the punchline that I and many others have been making them the last few years. Is that fair, Lewis?
Mm. Well, that's definitely fair. They shouldn't be a punchline. Look, their offense was never going to be a punchline. Dak Prescott is nobody's punchline. That's obvious. CeeDee Lamb is nobody's punchline. Amari Cooper is nobody's punchline. And neither is Ezekiel or Tony Pollard. So you know that they were going to be able to move the football and score points. There's no question about that. So what they did in the first game against Tampa Bay, which is always a wild card, I don't care what team it is, how a team plays on week one, I don't think you can ever look at that and say, that was the game I knew that this team was going to be for real. That's not, that is not a precursor, or rather, you know, a good indication of what your future success is going to look like in the NFL. Now, last week, look, they showed some grit. They showed some fortitude and resilience in that football game against the Chargers. But, just like in week one, I still say after week two, I have questions about this secondary. I have questions about this defense overall. I have questions about whether or not they can continue to find ways like they did last week to win football games, which was a lot. A lot of it had to do with the fact that two touchdowns were called back against on the Chargers. That should have been touchdowns that were truly, truly like exposing some weaknesses on the defensive side of the football for Dallas. That's where my concern lies. That's where I'm going to pump the brakes until I see more starting this Monday night in Dallas against Philadelphia.
That's fair. And obviously you're watching tape of them all week long as closely as anybody, as we will have Cowboys-Eagles Monday night on ESPN. Yeah. What do you think, Bart? As you watch them through 2 weeks, your reaction?
Listen, I think they've been solid. I think they're improving on the defense side of the ball, even though they're ranked 27th. But it is holes in this roster, and we're going to see. Like, it's still early, right? People can get out on fire, right? And they should have lost that game. We saw that, you know, that grotesque, you know, miss call down there with Herbert talking about he stopped his forward progress.
Yeah, yeah.
That was crazy, right? But, you know, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. And right now they're luck, but luck always changes. Let's see if that luck changes for them later in the season. Let's see if they can beat a good Philadelphia Eagles, you know, team that I've joked about, put my eyebrows on.
Right.
And they're showing a lot of grit with Jalen Hurts, who looks like a alternate universe Dak Prescott right now.
How about you, Jeff Darlington? Your perspective and the things you're hearing around the league about the Cowboys off to this good start.
Well, I don't want to speak for Lewis and Bart here, you know, as we try to have this intervention with you. I just think that we need to, I just wonder where, like, why now? Like, I agree that the optimism was there in the preseason when it came to Dak Prescott, perhaps Dan Quinn with the defense and Micah Parsons. But two games later, all of a sudden, you're all in. Like, we appreciate you, Greeny, but we just don't understand why now.
I told you in the tease that I would give you the one primary reason why. And the defense looks better. Tony Pollard has actually given them a running game, which Zeke Elliott was not able to do last year, and I do not believe is capable of doing by himself anymore, but they've now turned that into a 1-2 punch. They've managed to mask all the issues they've had with players being available and not available on the offensive line. Micah Parsons looks like he's a superstar waiting to happen, and Dan Quinn has made the defense better. But here's the single biggest reason I'm buying in on the Cowboys. Because I, for the longest time, I will admit it, I have thought Dak Prescott was a good NFL quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And what he has shown me through 2 weeks, and particularly with what he did on that opening night, with everything in the world lined up against him, is that I'm wrong, and many of the others who have questioned his greatness are wrong. Dak Prescott is an elite NFL quarterback. When you make, in my opinion now, when you make a list of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League, Dak Prescott's name belongs on it. And that elevates football teams. And I didn't always believe that to be true about him, Lewis Riddick, but I do now. What do you think?
Look, he is in the upper echelon of quarterbacks in the NFL. No doubt. He will be able to do things with the ball in his hands if it's a tight game within one score and he has the last possession. He's one of those guys that's going to make you as the opposition start to sweat and go, "Here he comes." He's going to do something to get this team over the hump. But he can't rush the passer. He can't cover on third down. He can't be one of those guys who doesn't get beat on double moves. He can't be everything for this football team. And until the people who have to do those things prove to me that they can do it on a much more consistent basis. I mean, what are we talking about? Division winners? Or are we talking about true contenders? That's the question.
Well, we'll start finding out. Perhaps Monday night we'll start figuring it out. And the one thing I did notice yesterday is that my conversion here seems to have ingratiated me into the Prescott family. I'm honored that Tad has tweeted at me. He regularly tweets at our show, and we appreciate it. Tad tweeted, "Welcome to the correct side." He's laughing at me, as I suppose most people are. Meanwhile, our next stop is Cleveland. And the big question, will Odell Beckham Jr. return this week against the Bears? He is practicing this week. You know that he hasn't played since tearing his ACL now 11 months ago. The Browns could really use him, especially with Jarvis Landry injured. Here's the latest.
We'll see how it goes, but Odell's been great out here at practice. He's working really hard. He's gotten a ton of reps between just him and Baker, gotten a ton of reps in 7-on-7 and the team drills.
The plan right now for him to play Sunday?
The plan is to practice Wednesday, see how it goes this week, but I'm not ruling him out.
All right, not ruling him out. That seems like a step in the right direction. Now, this is complicated. Over the last 3 years, Baker Mayfield has completed, as you see there, under 56% of his throws intended for OBJ, which is the third worst mark among any quarterback wide receiver duo in the league with at least 100 attempts. So that has not been good in the past. And obviously, they have adapted to a new place. And Lewis, would you pick up the thought there? Because I was reading in your notes, from the last time Odell Beckham played with this group to today, they are a vastly different offense. How does that fit together if he comes back this weekend?
Yeah, I think what happens now is like Odell has to really fit into what is the current DNA and the current structure of this offense, which is very much so a run-centric, run-heavy, two-back attack type of offense that just really emphasizes gratuitous, or rather optimistic or opportunistic play action shots down the field. It is not an offense that is going to run through him. It's not an offense that's going to be predicated on making sure that he gets his touches. The guy who they need to make sure get their touches are number 27 and number 24, Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb. That's what makes this offense go. Everything else builds off of that, and that is what Kevin Stefanski has put into place. That is what is going to ultimately carry them over the hump, if they can get over the hump and get to the AFC Championship game and maybe get to the Super Bowl. It's not going to run through Odell, but I think that's fine. I think that's okay. Look, the fact that the play-action passing game is such an integral part of their offense, and the fact that Odell is such a plus 20-yard kind of producer in the passing game as a receiver, I think it plays right into his hands. I think it's perfect. He just has to make sure he buys into that.
Bart, you've been one who has questioned the Browns. When they bring Odell Beckham back, which we think might be this weekend, how much better does he make them?
Well, I think he makes them better in the short term because, listen, you look at Baker's last game, he only threw the ball 21 times to Lewis's point. It's not a lot of opportunities out there, but with Jarvis Landry out of there, that means the majority should go to Odell Beckham, which should make him happy. He's not a guy just that can run deep. He's also a guy, traditionally, has been a guy that was able to take a quick slant and take it to the house. He hasn't been able to get those opportunities because that's really more of the strength of Jarvis Landry, who can't do what Odell does as far as stretching the field vertically because of the long speed. So I think Odell in the short term will be great. When Jarvis Landry comes back, that's when the problem happens, because then Odell, will he be fine with only getting one or two targets a game? Right now, he'll get 3, 4, 7, maybe 10 targets if they get in the pinch, because he's the most explosive player that they have now. I think Jarvis Landry is the heartbeat of this team. But right now, Odell Beckham can do that.
So, Jeff, if he plays this weekend, how closely will you be looking at the box score after the game is over?
Greeny, if you want to know whether Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham have a proper connection on Monday morning, when you look at that box score, don't just look at the catches and the yards, look at the targets, because what it's going to come down to for them is efficiency. Early on with Baker Mayfield, he even admitted as much, that he was trying to make too many plays to his star player, sometimes forcing the ball his way. With this offense, they are all settled in. They need Odell to also settle in, which it sounds like he is fully willing to do. It's about efficiency. You showed the stat at the top of this segment, 53%, third worst in the NFL for the last three seasons. When you look at those targets and you look at those catches, they have to match up. It can't be 2 for 4. It can't be 1 for 4, 1 for 5. It's got to be like 4 for 4, 5 for 5 when he targets and catches here.
Lewis, final word.
Yeah, look, I think all the talk about the Cleveland Browns this offseason and them being a contender was never centered around Odell Beckham. No one was hyped up about this football team as much as everyone was. It wasn't because, well, Odell Beckham's there and because they can produce explosive with Odell, but Baker needs to make sure he gets the number. You know, he needs to make sure he gets his touches. That was never anybody's point of emphasis. And so that, I think, needs to be remembered right now, that I don't really care what his number of targets are when he comes back. I don't really care what Baker's efficiency with Odell is. I think Cleveland is after one thing. That is wins. And that is winning the division and getting to the AFC Championship game. However they do that with Odell or not is really irrelevant at this point.
All right, we will wait and see. Again, it's not a certainty that he will play this weekend against a good defense in the Chicago Bears. Meanwhile, Saturday night, two title fights and the return of Nick Diaz to the Octagon to take on former champ Ruthless Robbie Lawler. That highlights the UFC 266 stacked card. The prelims are on ESPN News, ESPN Deportes, and ESPN Plus starting at 8 Eastern, followed by the main card on pay-per-view. To order in English and Spanish, go to ESPNplus.com/PPV. Coming up, a division cannot be decided in September. Or can it? Why one member of our group says Mac Jones and the Patriots have to win this Sunday or else. Plus, he's not in college anymore. Wait till you hear what Urban Meyer said about coaching in the NFL. Is this going to work? That's on the way. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Call the non-believers.
How did that
call the non-believers? They can't stop a nosebleed.
Congratulations. See you in Pittsburgh.
Can't wait.
The words that made him a legend every week here with us. Bart Scott tells us the things he can't wait to see in the NFL this weekend. And yes, he kept his eyebrows. He had the eyebrow wager last week. Had the Eagles lost to the 49ers, you would have shaved your eyebrows. So it is, there's a suggestion, by the way, has been made by the staff that we do that every week, that you have to pick a game, and it is your eyebrow game.
Greedy, how long can it last, though?
Well, I mean, if for your sake, it better last 17 weeks. Anyway, what are the three things you can't wait to see this Sunday?
Listen, for me, I love a good soap opera, man. I love a good car crash. For me, the first thing I can't wait for is Aaron Rodgers, like I said, to insert foot in mouth, because, listen, 1 week, they had homecoming. Everybody beats the Lions. This is what the Lions is all about. They get knocked down. Dan Campbell told you as much. Knock down, get back up, knock down, get back up. Let's tell you who's not going to go down. Who's like Tommy, hey, yo, Tommy, ain't heard no bell. I tell you what, that's San Francisco, man. San Francisco has been Green Bay's nemesis, and now Aaron Rodgers has opened up Pandora's box for all the trolls. I can't wait to see it happen and see if little new Steven Seagal gets upset again.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, listen, last week, this was really, I think this is one of the most underreported stories of all the world. King Henry is still the king. I mean, the fact that this man can continue to get stronger, he just told Brady, he said, listen, man, just give me the damn ball and move out the way. He put that team on his back. Look at this, man. He's got guys making business decisions saying, you know what, I am not getting on the train tracks when the train go by. I can't wait to see what he has for an encore, Greeny. And finally.
Spectacular, yeah.
Finally, I know you were hurt a little bit watching Zach Wilson, but listen, the Patriots come back down to earth. This is a must-win for the Patriots. Mm-hmm. Mac and Cheese cannot survive throwing 4-5 yard passes. Check down Charlie. He's going to have to actually push the ball down the field. I think that the Saints had a bad game because they had 8 assistants that weren't there. Mac and Cheese is going to have to win this game because guess who's coming to town next week, Greeny?
Tom Brady.
Oh, terrific Tom, and his beautiful cleft chin is coming to town, and he's going to have to see that, see the highlights of his predecessor. I tell you what, I can't wait to see if the Patriots can get a dub, because if not, they're going to be 1-3.
So you're telling me this is a must-win? Bart Scott looks skeptical.
Must-win. And listen, I know your key card still works over there at Patriot Nation, but this is a must-win because Mac and Cheese can't get away with just throwing a ball 4 yards and checkdowns and screens.
Bartholomew.
Going to put your beard on?
Bartholomew.
Going to put your Papa Bert smell on?
The fact that you said right now, what is this, week 3?
It's week 3.
That is a must-win for the Patriots. We're not even talking about a divisional game that counts one half. We're just talking about a team in the New Orleans Saints. Week 3, it's must-win? Please explain this to me.
You got them beating Terrific Tom?
Huh?
You got them beating Terrific Tom?
No, I'm not even worried about that.
You know,
I'm not even worried about that.
You know what my biggest take was from last week when I watched the Jets and I had to suffer through that, but I'm contractually obligated to watch?
Right.
Listen, what I learned from that is it's the Bills and everybody else within that division. So, listen, if they fall down to 1-3 and they got to go against the Bills twice, that's 5 losses. And listen, if the Patriots don't get to the playoffs this year, it's going to be a big problem.
I want to pick up on something that you said in your piece there, and I want to hear what Damian Woody thinks about it as well. It sounds to me, while the world is singing the praises of Mac Jones and his generally mistake-free performance through the first 2 weeks, Tim Hasselbeck gave him a grade of an A on our program yesterday, that you are questioning it. Why?
No, what I'm saying is he's going to have to push the ball down the field and play quarterback at some point. He's going to be looking at somebody that's not a rookie on the other side of the other field. He's going to look at somebody that's his superior. He's going to have to open up the offense. McDaniels is giving him spoon feeds. Check down, screens, draws, isn't going to get it done against a quarterback like Tom Brady, not against a guy like Josh Allen. He's going to have to play more.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's 2 weeks so far, and it's been so far so good. They were one fumble away week one from maybe being unbeaten at this point. We'll see. In the meantime, a team that has not yet won a game and seems to be Well, candidly, they seem to be something of a disaster, is Jacksonville. And the Urban Meyer era there is off to a very rough and unusual start. They lose both their games by double digits. Last Sunday, Meyer told Broncos coach Vic Fangio something very interesting. Take a listen to this.
I don't know Urban Meyer at all, really. I met him the other day, you know, shook his hand before the game and after the game. And his comment to me was, every week it's like playing Alabama in the NFL.
Well, isn't that it?
Duh.
Well, right. Jeff Darlington, pick up that thought. There feels to me like there is a school of thought that this is off to a really terrible start for Urban in Jacksonville. You make your home down there in Florida. What do you hear?
Well, first of all, this is not a good example of the awkwardness that has been Urban Meyer in Jacksonville. Actually, this is at the bottom of the list, but it is a good jumping off point. Because, by the way, it is like playing Alabama every week in the NFL. Every coach will tell you that. The margin of error in the NFL is so hard. And Urban Meyer, by the way, has beaten Alabama at times in college. But on the greater scale of this, what we're talking about here with Urban Meyer in Jacksonville is the same thing we had discussions about when it came to Nick Saban in the NFL, when it came to going back to Steve Spurrier, Chip Kelly, these awkward moments that these coaches have as they try to make their way in the NFL. And that is what we have seen from Urban Meyer since the beginning. He's essentially looked at all those coaches and said, hold my beer. Watch all these awkward, weird things I'm going to do. Whether he wins or not, I'm going to leave the jury out on that. I don't know. But the start of this thing has certainly been rocky, to say the least.
Well, if he starts to win, then a lot of those things they'll seem quirky, yeah, as opposed to awkward and weird. But Bart,
that's a great way of putting it.
What do you think?
Listen, NFL coaches aren't going to feel sorry for you. These are some of the most brutal, cutthroat people in all the world. It's better you than me. And what he has to understand, it is like Alabama. The only issue is you don't have a great team. Right now, you would be Wayne State University, and you're not going to get the best players to come to you. You're not going to have great recruiting classes. And he's at the beginning of his program. At best, this program can turn around in 3 years. Will he have the patience to endure? Because you have to be a high percentage decision maker. If you have a bad draft class, it pushes you back 3 or 4 years. And will he be able to endure that much time without, you know, health issues?
And they have the superstar young quarterback there, right? The guy that everyone says is the can't miss John Elway-esque prospect in Trevor Lawrence. What do you think, D-Wood?
No, I think a lot of what Bart said is right. You know, this is not a situation like at Ohio State or Florida where you're getting the top of the litter every year. You got to go into a draft, and you got to hit on your draft picks. Regardless of what you have in Trevor Lawrence, if you don't hit on your draft picks, you will never win in the National Football League. And for a guy like Urban Meyer, who's been uber successful in college, how much patience does he have at the NFL level?
Now, that remains the big question. And this is happening with Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence, and yet the conversations have been somewhat quiet around the country. If this was happening in a lot of other cities, I think it would be the number one story pretty much every single day. Much more football as we continue on this Thursday. But let me run the bases, because we're going right down the stretch of the baseball season here. Let's start with Boston. Kyle Schwarber homered twice, scored four times as the Red Sox won their seventh straight. Chris Sale threw five innings, struck out eight. Red Sox beat the Mets by a score of 12-5. In the Bronx, Gary Sanchez put an exclamation point on a big Yankees victory. With a two-run homer in the eighth, Yanks beat the Rangers 7-3 to complete the sweep there. Yankees-Red Sox will start a three-game series tomorrow in Boston. Meanwhile, drama in the game between the Jays and the Rays. Toronto pitcher Ryan Barucki drilling Kevin Kiermaier in the back in the eighth. The bench is cleared. Barucki got ejected, got high fives from everybody. Rays won the game 7-1, clinched a postseason berth. Those teams had the controversy a little bit earlier this week. And so what does it all add up to? Well, here it is. The Red Sox have a two-game lead right now over the Yankees for the first spot in the wild card race, just a half game separating the Yanks and the Jays for the second spot. Fangraphs gives Toronto a 51% chance of making the playoffs and the Yankees 49. Meanwhile, if you're looking for baseball tomorrow on ESPN and the app, we've got three postseason impact games for you. At 2 Eastern, Cardinals-Cubs from Wrigley. At 7, Yankees square off against the Red Sox from Fenway. And we cap the day with the Braves and the Padres at Petco Park. Outstanding baseball coming your way tomorrow here on ESPN. As we continue, Aaron Rodgers once again going after those who criticized his offseason. What did he say this time? How will it affect his team, and just how good are they? We'll answer all those questions next. Get up on ESPN.